Hello, and welcome to the Writer's Block, Season 5 of the Telly Award-winning podcast, coming to you live from San Diego Comic-Con. How are you guys doing? I am Ryland Grant, screenwriter, Ringo Award-winning creator of fine comics like Aberrant, Banjax, and The Jump. And Fa Sheng Origins, which hopefully will, at some point find its way into a comic shop via Dynamite Comics here. The guy sitting to my left, the other voice in the dark, if you're listening on Apple Pods, is...
David Avalone, writer and exhausted person.
Yeah. Great show for you today. Great panel here with some amazing editors from San Diego Comic-Con 2024. If you have missed any of our previous podcasts, conversations featuring comic luminaries like Kevin Eastman, Stan Sakai, Rodney Barnes, many more, Barbara Dillon about 12 times, I believe she is our most...
Our all-time guest.
Yeah, and all-time in number and in love hearts. And appreciation and heart. Double on back and check all that out. We are... available anywhere you get your ear crack. You can also watch us on YouTube. So double on back and check it out. But Evelyn, why don't you set the table for us?
Well,
and let's get the discussion going.
Today we're here to talk about editing comic books and what editors want from writers and artists. And our guests today are Barbara Dillon. Barbara, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Barbara Dillon. I am the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Fanbase Press. We are an ISNY.
Disney buys.
Sounds
like an AFI gaffe.
Walt Eisner.
My apologies. We are an Eisner and Harvey Awards nominated and Glad Award winning publishing company and media outlet. And ultimately, we just love to support other creators in any way that we can.
And we are also joined by Dynamite's executive editor. Did I get it right this time?
You got it.
It's a good title.
I know. It.
He's had the same job but four titles.
Yeah. When I say it to people that ask what you do, and I say executive editor, there's such an air of like pretension about it that is completely unearned.
I am editor supreme of Dynamite Comics.
Yeah. But Joe, tell the kids at home a little bit about yourself.
I am the executive editor. Of Dynamite Entertainment. We have actually this year we are celebrating our 20th anniversary publishing.
Yes, that's right.
I have been with the company for 23 years, which those first 3 years were before we were publishing. It was a company called Dynamic Forces. And over the course of those 20 years, we have published everything from Red Sonja to James Bond. We are currently publishing a whole bunch of Disney stuff, a whole bunch of Warner Brothers stuff. This guy has written a bunch of stuff for us in the form of The Shadow, Elvira, Twilight Zone, a whole bunch of stuff. So, that's me.
Great. I wanted to start, I mentioned this to Joe last night, but I wanted to start with an anecdote about careers in comics, which is... 10 years ago, I was working in indie film, and I was burnt to an absolute crisp. And I was mostly working on other people's stuff as an editor and a director and a cheater and all that stuff. And it was mostly polishing other people's turds, which is a tiresome experience past a certain age. Tiresome experience when you're 18, too. It just gets worse over time. And I needed a better creative outlet, and a colleague at San Diego Comic-Con at the Hilton Hotel said, you know, I want to introduce you to Joe Ryman. And we sat on the balcony at the Odyssey Bar and had some cocktails, and 3 hours later, and I should mention, we did not in any way discuss comic books.
Right.
We talked about our favorite movies and books and whatever.
I think we hated on a current show as well.
Yeah, probably. We probably bonded over something we both hated, which, you know, whatever works. And at the end of it, Joe very kindly said, I'll go back to New York and see if I can find something that you can work on for us, and that was legendary Vampirella number one. Of, yeah, obviously, you've all read it. and that was, since then, Dynamite has mostly kept me in print for about a decade. Probably about 70% of my comics writing career. Partly because Joe and I have a very good relationship as writer and editor. But I want to jump in with, we'll circle back to our main topic, but...
Can I start with the disclaimer?
Sure.
Okay. So we've done editors panels before, and we get a lot of creators and would-be creators that want to come and hear, okay, how do I, you know, how do I get in business with an editor? How do I approach an editor? Lesson number one is do not corner set editor in the hallway after this and try and hand them a book or a proposal. It is the easiest way to, you know, get rejected. I have been tasked with karate kicking anybody that tries that. If you want to come up and ask a question or tell them you love their work or whatever, but if I see a proposal come out,
I'm
also heading to another panel right after this.
I'm
not going to be stopping anyway, because otherwise I'm going to be late.
Yeah.
Lesson number one.
That is lesson number one. I became personally obsessed with teaching people networking when at a networking event at a different Comic-Con, a guy walked up to me and jammed a floppy in my chest before hello. And he had just attended a networking panel. And I said, how did you spend an hour in a networking panel and not be told not to ever do that?
Right.
And it was like a cocktail party. Yes, I want to carry your floppy around for 2 hours while I'm trying to drink a cocktail. Fantastic. But anyway, Ryland had suggested before the panel that we talk a little bit about how things have changed in the industry, if you feel they have, and in what way they have. And Barbara, why don't we start with you?
Things have definitely changed, and they continue to change. I think that we're seeing a lot of things contract in the industry right now and expand at the same time. I think that's what's so interesting. I mean, we've been doing this for almost 15 years. Digital comics, and I think what's really challenging right now is that publishing is contracting. Publishers are not able to put out as many comics. I think the retail and direct market is contracting. You're seeing a lot of shops shutter. Comics journalism is shuttering. So if you're a creator and you're having trouble getting press and promotion of your work, because there aren't as many outlets out there, and a lot of folks are doing it on a volunteer basis or a part-time basis, so they're juggling multiple jobs and trying to, you know, be of help to the industry. So a lot of different things are contracting at the same time that there are even more opportunities to get your work out there as an independent creator, and that publishers are also taking advantage of by way of crowdfunding and mostly Kickstarter. So there are myriad ways to be sharing your story, getting your book out there, but it definitely is harder and harder to do so through traditional means, and I think we'll likely talk a lot about that and dive into that more today.
I would agree with that. I would also say that we're having our best year ever as a publisher of mainstream comics, but it has never been a better time as an independent creator to get your work out there and find an audience. Absolutely. When I do portfolio reviews, and also I have a relationship with the Kubert School, which is on the East Coast, when I go there and I see someone that is drawing unconventionally for what we would look for, I say to them, you don't have to draw, you know, Superman. You can go do your own thing, you know. And again, the outlets are numerous. Just be wary that they come with a price in terms of a lot of work. It's a lot of work doing it on your own. There's a reason that publishers are still around, but you know, it's up to the individual to figure out what it is that they want to do, what's best for them.
Chris Ryle, what do you think?
He agrees with both of us.
Yeah, I had that joke in the holster. I had to use it. Chris is under the weather.
Yeah, so
couldn't join us this morning, but he's here with us in spirit.
Yeah, I want to add to that one of the, you know, sometimes I'm looking, I used to do this more often, walk through Artist Alley looking for artists, and I always have two questions. If someone has a beautiful print of Harley Quinn or Princess Leia, I say, show me a character you designed. And show me sequential art. Pinups, everybody wants to be a cover artist. That is not the entry point.
No.
In comic books in any way, shape, or form.
No, certainly not for mainstream comics. And not for, when I say mainstream, I mean, you know, direct market comic shop. What we do, what Marvel does, what DC does.
Yeah,
being a cover artist is a very specific assignment.
Yeah. So if you're an artist that wants to be in comic books, right, do sequentials. And even, you know, find comic scripts online and draw a page, even if it's a page from a comic that everyone is seeing, show us your version of it. And that will get a lot more interest, I think, from editors or, you know, people like me who are writers who are always looking for another artist to collaborate with.
And the flip side, if you're a writer, I'm not going to read a script. Like, that's not showing me anything. What, find a friend to collaborate with, find an artist friend to collaborate with, show me something that, it, you know, is a story, not just a script.
It's I recommend that people look at particularly anthologies. There are a zillion anthologies on Kickstarter, and I've occasionally been asked to participate in them, and I honestly use them as an excuse to do a pilot for a whole comic book series. And
that's,
you know, like, Dynamite knows me well, they know I can write, but when I submitted some proposals for a creator-owned series, shockingly, they chose the one that had 8 pages of beautiful finished art.
I think I go back to Joe's point about that you know, when you're an editor and you're receiving, you know, a script or even a treatment, it can be challenging to be able to take that on, especially if you don't have a team coming with you already attached. And to David's point as well, I think, especially now, given the, you know, contraction of the industry, I think what you need to do is make something. It can be really small. It can be a short comic in an anthology, but I think that a lot of, especially the larger publishers, they want you to have some sort of name. They want you to have an established, you know, credits list. This doesn't have to be vast. You don't have to have worked on Superman or, you know, something recognizable, but you do have to demonstrate that you can get work done, that you're able to not just, you know, put, you know, write a script. It has to be produced. It has to be done. It can be self-published. That's absolutely fine. It can be in an anthology, but it's going to be so much stronger, and you'll have a more solid foot in the door if you can bring to Joe, to anybody, you know, a finished work. You can say, you know, not only did I have the idea, but here it is.
And it doesn't have to be printed either. I mean, you don't have to go. I see a lot of, I know there's a whole cottage industry out there of small print operations that will print your custom comic, you know, make 100 copies. But, you know, that doesn't tell me anything either. Because it doesn't, one, it doesn't look like what a comic's going to look like. It's on weird, you know, glossy tape. You know, it's if you want to print a comic, print a comic. I'm not going to, but I don't need to see a printed comic. A digital version, actually, all my reading is currently done digitally anyway. So a digital version is more than fine.
Yeah, and literally, instead of handing someone a floppy, it's a very different thing to show me a QR code.
Yeah.
On your.
Although then I got to find the app on my phone. So, but I mean, that's on me at that point.
Yeah. But it's there are certainly better ways to do it.
Yeah, I think starting slow is such starting small is such good advice. I see do a lot of how-to panels. I try to, everyone I meet, I try to get them to do a comic book if they want to do a comic book. It has never been more possible than it is right now. It's not easy. It is very difficult to do this. You will cry sometimes. It's going to take a lot of time.
Oh.
It's going to take a lot of money, perhaps. But if you want to do this, it's very possible. Where I see people get hung up a lot is, you know, I mean, it's the worst thing you can do to one of these people is come and be like, okay, it is a 100 issue series and it's got all these things, and they tune out immediately. It is, you start small. Like, you want to create a world where you can tell 100 stories, but show us the first one.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be the first 6 issue arc. You can get buried trying to map out a 6 issue arc. Give us one good issue. Give us one good 10-page story set in this world that shows, I know structure, I know what makes a great character, I know how to set up a conflict, I know how to make you smell the world, all of these things. You can do that in 10 pages. And in fact, if you can do it in 10 pages, rather than trying to do it in 120 pages, you're going to impress these people a lot more readily.
Yeah.
So do that. The other thing I'm hearing here, another lesson is good, is that do not shoot in the dark with this stuff. There are people out there, they're all online, shouting from the rooftops. They want eyeballs on their stuff, and they're doing it right. I mean, part of the reason we had these three people up here, and not to continue to act like rattles, is up here, is that they are publishers who are doing it right in a world now where there are a lot of people who aren't doing it right, and people are going out of business, partially because things have changed so radically and it is hard, but also because maybe they didn't adapt or maybe they weren't doing it right in the first place. These publishers are doing it right. So take a look at that. What are they putting out? What are they like? Why are these books working when so many aren't? But that can come all the way down to the creators, right? When you go on Kickstarter and you see something that isn't funding, there's a reason why it's not funding, if not 10 reasons or 12 reasons. When you go on Kickstarter and you see a book that a single floppy that is, you know, making $50,000 or $60,000 and has a couple of thousand backers, they're doing something right. And if you take a
look, or they just added Cthulhu to the
Look,
we just did it. I'm not proud.
Yeah. So
when in doubt.
Yeah. So do not shoot in the dark. Give yourself a target. There are people that are doing this really. Yeah. You know, like just steal. You know, don't steal their IP, their story ideas, but go in, figure out what they're doing, and do it. There was a way to swing a baseball bat. You know, just grab a baseball bat and get a batting cage and figure it out. There are mechanics to it. If you do that, you're going to hit a baseball often. You're going to hit it far. So figure out how to hit the baseball and then start taking your swings.
To hit one more time, everyone's, especially if you grow up as some kind of super nerd, which I will absolutely cop to, you have that
shocking.
You have that 1,000-page science fiction epic you want to do that, you know, was your favorite thing when you were 12 years old, and that is the biggest red flag. They come in with, as Ryland just said, the demonstration of your abilities in the shortest possible space, in the most concise way. And when the time comes to unveil the science fiction epic, they will take a look at it. First, you just have to demonstrate the basic ability to do the job. And I was gonna say, the interesting thing about the difference between a script and a finished page is that a script is a thing you did yourself. And it doesn't necessarily tell an editor that you can communicate with an artist and get the artist to draw what you wanted them to draw, and communicate with the colorist, and communicate with the letterer. And if a page looks bad, a lot of times it's because this person doesn't know how to have that communication, and that's a big part of it. But let us now pivot to the actual title of this thing, which is, what do editors want? What are you looking for in submissions? Joe, do you want to?
It gets difficult with us because we do so much licensing stuff, and you know, it's kind of, I'll be a little bit of a wet blanket, but usually, and David knows this from having worked with them, but usually when we start a project or announce a project, we've already got a team in place, so like those slots are filled. Very rarely, although we have, because we've expanded so much with Disney and Warner Brothers, we do have a bunch of projects that don't have slots filled. So in terms of once like you're in the door, in terms of what I'm looking for reliability, I'm looking for consistent delivery, I'm looking for open to notes, particularly with licensed properties. I mean, David's worked on, I think, mostly licensed stuff. Some of the stuff we own, we have a little bit more freedom, but you know, there's notes from me and then there's notes from the licensor. Usually my notes are the notes from the licensor, you know, they have the final say. And also I think in this day and age, what's become more important, and this isn't necessarily something I would say you have to do, but because I've seen the flip side, which is, you know, we work with Garth Ennis and he has no social media presence, but also he's Garth Ennis and he's spent 20, 25 years developing his brand. He doesn't need a social media presence, but promotion, getting yourself out there when you're on a project in a positive way. You know, it's very easy to get promotion in a negative way these days, but in a positive way that's not going to cause problems for the company or for yourself, you know. So leave that to whatever you find that definition to be. But you know, promotion has really become super important in terms of, you know, because we have a marketing department, but you know, it's more pure when it comes from the creator, for sure.
I think the audience has people since the beginning of show business. People want a parallel social relationship with the artist. they want to think. And one of the, you know, as a comics writer, when I have a new comic on the stands, there are four local shops in Los Angeles that I have really good relationships with. I go to all of them. I sign all of their copies. I take pictures of one kind or another with the owner looking at our comics or mugging for the camera or whatever. And people want to know you and they want to like you. And that's, you know, this is an industry with a lot of introverts in it. I'm an extrovert and I will cop to. It is easy for me. It is not easy for a lot of people. And there are ways to make some sort of personality even out of being an introvert.
Sure.
You know, take pictures of yourself in the comic book shop wearing a mask. You know, whatever it takes.
Right.
But even that will make people feel closer to you. And I want to mention, embedded in what I just said, is I think a lot of comics creators do not understand at all that it's like you're the Ford Motor Company. You need a good relationship with the dealerships. Because comic books are not actually bought by customers. They are bought by comic book stores. And that person walks into the showroom, and you meet the owner of the showroom to say, oh, Drawing Blood number 4 is out today. It's terrific. David came in the shop. He signed some. Yeah, this is a great comic. Got to read it. And when you have those relationships, and I know this is a little bit downstream from starting, but once you've started, one of the ways you maintain momentum. When I travel, my wife, thank God, is very tolerant of this. I Google the closest local comic book shop, and I walk in. And, you know, I write for Dynamite. Sometimes I walk in, and I see Marvel, DC, and Walking Dead, and I can walk right out. Because people do not have my books, that's fine. But if I see a Red Sonja, I'm like, there's chances there's an Avalonia book in here. I will find it. I will shake a hand, and... those people are invaluable.
But the social media promotional presence that Joe's talking about is it's very important when you're playing the comic shop game. It is, I don't know if it's 5 or 10 times as important if you are out there slinging your own books, if you're in the Kickstarter game, if you're trying to work your way up to the place where some outfits like this will consider you for the work. You're doing your own books, you're trying to pimp your own books. You are the publisher, you are the product, right? When I do a Kickstarter, it's the Jump number 3 from Ringo Award winner Ryland Grant. I'm the franchise. So they either care about that or they don't. And in the beginning, nobody cares about it, right? You have to make them care. And that is won over time with a lot of effort and consistency. And, you know, you have to be charming helpful in all of these things. People have to want to see you succeed. You have to put out a great product. If you can be as charming as possible, they buy the first book and it's terrible, they're never going to buy another book again. Your brand is sullied. So a brand gets built over time, and if you can then deliver that brand to some folks like this and say, hey, this is what I've done on my own, can we do something together? Then that is an attractive proposal. Assuming the book is the right fit, and that stuff.
Barbara?
I do want to add, I think that everyone's made really salient points, and I would add in terms of the, not necessarily just the branding, but your rapport outside of retailers, I think it's vastly important that you have a good rapport with everyone. I mean, I'm definitely the person who's always like, the most important thing to take away from life is you have to be kind. You have to be kind to retailers, you have to be kind to your readers. You have to be kind to your creative team. You have to be kind to your editor. You have to be kind because it's a very small industry. We all know one another. We all work with one another. And it's going to get around very fast if you are someone who is challenging to work with. I mean, I would say from the jump of whether we bring someone on as a creator, we are talking to folks before. We are very much vetting you before, you know, and you may not know that. But we will go and chat with people that have worked with you in the past to see how has this person been to work with, because we're going to be working together for a long time. And we want to know that if you are out there either with us at conventions or without us, that you are going to be doing a good job representing yourself and representing our brand as well. So I think it's really important that you be aware of that from the
get-go. This happened with me yesterday, and it's a little more complex when you're at the publisher level. Stakes are higher. But I had another creative type who was thinking about getting in business with some people. asked me about two people, and it was very simple. It's just, is this person one of us? And that is loaded, just meaning like, you know, are they part of the ecosystem? You know, Abalone loves to say, ask not what comments can do for you.
I was actually about to say that. It sounds funny, but I, you know, when I do networking, I teach that it is a community, and be a good part of the community, even in the social media space. If all you ever do in your social media is talk about your own comics, that's bad. That is not a good thing. When Dynamite has a new book out that looks great, I go, hey guys, you know, Space Ghost number one, you should check it out, David Pebbles. It's really good stuff.
It is very good. You should go out and get it.
But, you know, when Ryland has a new book out, when Fanbase has a new book out, I promote those too. Because people get very tired of people only talking about
a rising tide lifts all boats.
And also, it's that part of the, again, the parasocial relationships of show business. People like the idea that we all, you know, it's like the Marvel bullpen mirage of the 1970s and 80s.
There wasn't one.
Stan Lee gave the impression that he walked in the morning and every Marvel artist and writer was sitting in a room, hanging out, having a great time. No, they were freelancers dropping off a stack of pages, signing a voucher and going, hey man, can I get a check today? Because I gotta pay my rent. That's actually what was happening. But Stan was like, we're a rollicking crew all right here in Manhattan. You know, living in the suburbs, man. That's not true at all. But anyway, sorry.
But you talk about the vetting. And so I was asked about two people, just like you're talking about, Barbara. Somebody said, you know, hey, and I had to say very honestly, it was somebody who I value, and somebody who values me, and they wanted honesty. And I said, this person is one of us. Not only that, this person is the best of us. This other person, while this person has good qualities, I don't believe that person is one of us.
Yeah.
I don't think that they lift others up. I don't think that, they're you will run into people who they want to lift everybody up again, this rising tide and everything. They're the people you meet that immediately categorize you. This person can do something for me, this person can't.
Yeah.
And those people very quickly get very bad reputations and run into problems. So don't be that person.
And on that topic, there's a very talented writer in this room who once asked me about an artist, great project of his. And he's an excellent artist who is slow as molasses. And I said, he's an excellent, yes, I'm talking about you, Hannibal. And I said, this guy is great. I love every page. And I
Hannibal.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, Hannibal. Hannibal. Not naming the artist.
Yeah, one of us.
Not naming the artist. But I said, this guy will deliver you beautiful pages, but I hope you're not on a tight schedule because he will sometimes. I will even confess, it helped that I didn't like the editor very much. But I was on a book once with this artist, and we got as far as issue 3, and the art was gorgeous, and then issue 3, the art was taking a really long time, and they started talking about replacing him. And my script got later and later and later while I was waiting for him to catch up with me, and when he finished drawing issue 3, I was like, oh, look, I just finished the script for issue 4. Because I was helping my talented friend to stay on the book. This wasn't one of your friends, by the way. I wouldn't do that to you, Joe. But we were ahead enough on publication. It was going to be fine. But I would never recommend this artist. Oh, his stuff is gorgeous. It's beautiful. Without also saying, be prepared for the pages to maybe be 2 to 3 weeks late at all.
Which can be accommodated. You know,
if you know what you're doing.
If you know what's going on, it can be accommodated. Schedules can be adapted, it depends on the overall project.
Yeah, but it's analogous. I used to be a first AD in one of the many thousands of stupid jobs I've had in my life. And when I would start, I would always say to the makeup artists, just tell me the truth. If it's gonna take you 3 hours to do her makeup, don't tell me it's gonna take 2, and then I have to knock on the trailer every 15 minutes, and we both hate each other. Just tell me 3, and I will make the schedule work. I can do that. But if you lie to me because you think the lie sounds better than the truth, I'm going to learn the truth on day one of shooting, and then we're both in trouble. So let me do one more question, though. When in portfolio review, you say you're looking for certain things, but like, what are avenues that you use to find people?
artist on Craigslist. So never rule out any outlet to find someone. I would say also, please visit Artist Alley. Please visit Small Press. Go to any, you know, it doesn't have to be a Comic-Con. Go to your local convention, local signings, meet people. And the same thing, be kind. And also, you know, glean from that interaction what it's like to work with them. What are they like when you walk up to them? Please be kind, be thoughtful of their time, especially if you're at a convention. Grab their card, tell them your name, let them know that you're interested, that you're looking, but don't monopolize their time, because if you're at a convention, they're trying to make money, they're trying to make sales, so just be great in your interaction. But there are so many different places, different avenues that you can find folks nowadays. But again, based on what we're talking about, referrals. If you know folks who've worked with other creators and you like their work, them how it was to work with their artists, and that might be a really great way to find
community. Co-sign all of that, and add to what David said about the comic local comic shop. If you have a local comic shop, odds are that there are people in there that are trying to do it too. You know, so you're going to possibly find your writer, you're going to possibly find an artist. If you're an artist, you're going to possibly find a writer, whatever. And you know, again, if you have one. And in terms of when I look at portfolios, looking for style, storytelling. And then the most important question is, how long did this page take you?
Right. and we should say that, like, for all the talk of, like, you know, accommodating people's time and schedules and whatever, I would say that a comic book artist should be able to complete a page in a day.
Oh, yeah.
That's sort of a nice, easy rule of thumb.
Yeah.
If it takes you 5 days to do
four,
a single
four
page.
Weeks, 4 weeks for a 22-page script. Color should take no more than 10 to 12 days, and letters should take a day.
Yeah,
and writing is a different thing. I would never say it should take you, you know, it should take you a week to write a script. I mean, that's on the writer. Writer starts everything, so I think they get their own lane personally. But you also got to decide. Well, if I'm writing 5 books and it takes me a month to write a script, you know, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, absolutely.
And because I always want to be thoughtful of the audience. If you have a mixed audience. So if you're at the level that you're submitting to large publishers,
right? Yes. Yes. Sorry. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I just, for those who may be new or, you know, lesser experience, it doesn't have to go that fast.
No. Yeah. Sorry. That's 20 years of doing it. You know, and that's how fast it has to go to keep it going.
1,000%.
It never stops, people.
Co-signing all of this stuff. I did my first comic book that eventually won the Ringo Award in a comic shop. There was a great comic shop called Meltdown in Hollywood, and there were a bunch of people that met there. Oh, there you go, some love, like it. There were a bunch of people who met in the back every Wednesday night, and they made comic books.
Right.
And I had worked in the film business for, you know, I don't know, 10 years, and wanted to do this, and I just found people that were doing it, and they helped me. Again, it was you know, they taught me how to do it. I work with a lot of artists. I have found so many of them online, on Twitter, on Facebook. There's a Facebook group called Connecting Comic Book Writers and Artists. When last I checked, there were 32,000 members, and it is a gallery. It is a bunch of talented men and women who post their work, and they post their rates, and they say, hey, looking for some work. And you start talking with them, and you do a test page with them, and you see if it's a good fit, and you see if they work quickly, and if they can take notes. And if you like that, and so I started doing that, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, and I found a lot of great artists there. One of my go-to colorists is a guy in the Philippines who's supporting a family, I don't know, 8 or 9 now, he's a coloring demon. He's awesome. My letterer is from the UK. I met him in a similar forum. I have artists in Mexico, in Hungary, in Brazil. Wouldn't have met these people at conventions. They're off doing their thing. A lot of them don't speak English. We communicate via email. It goes into Google Translate. They get about 98% of what I'm looking to get right off the bat. Maybe sometimes that last 2% can be a little difficult, but you figure it out over time. So it's all out there for you.
A note on, you know, finding people on Twitter. This is a typical example of how small the industry is. I needed an artist for a 4-page thing, and I looked at a hashtag on Twitter about a young woman. I wanted a young woman to draw. It was a hashtag called Visible Women. I looked at a bunch of artists on that. I found one that I particularly liked, named Skyla Cuttridge. And I hired her to do this four-page thing, and I mentioned that in passing to my colleague, Ben Bishop, who draws Drawing Blood. And he said, you had dinner with her in Albuquerque Comic Con. And it was at a table with 20 people, and she was at the far end. But he's like, you literally like waved to her from across the table, so you actually do know her. I have worked with her. She's great. It's going to be great looking material. So, you know, it gets around. We do all know each other. So now I would like to open up for questions. Do we have any questions for the editors? You seem like you were first.
So, maybe what are one of the top thing or top two things that you look for when you see a script or paper pages, like the first drafts from your creators? And then also, like, how do you totally approach the feedback about those couple of things, or maybe if you see something difficult?
Very directly. I give feedback very directly. Not for any other reason than just it's the easiest way. I don't soft sell anything. But, you know, again, David and I have a relationship of 10 years, so I mean, I'm not worried about hurting his feelings. But if I had a relationship with someone new, like I said, it wouldn't be harsh or anything, but it would just be direct. I mean, direct is the best way. This doesn't work, we gotta do this, whatever it is. Fortunately, again, I'm very fortunate in the sense that, you know, we are hiring people for the most part that are doing it. You know, they've already had some on the ground experience. And the first question, what am I looking for in a page? You know, you don't need, for me, it really depends on the project. I mean, some writers, you know, map everything out and go the Alan Moore route, which is fine. It's exhausting, but it's fine. You know, David's scripts, guys like Matt Wagner, guys like Garth, their scripts, they know what the artist that they're working with, so they're writing to that artist. And that
the hell of a company you just put me in.
But that makes a very big difference when you know the artist that you're writing to as well. Yep. You know, you're not gonna be spending a lot of time other than telling your story as a writer. You know,
yeah.
you're not getting a lot because you know who's going to be drawing.
Yeah.
I would also just add that if it's someone that we have brought on board, or if we're still looking at their script and, you know, maybe we looked at the treatment, one of the big things that I will do is I will, and again, I will sign what Joe said in terms of I want to be really clear and direct for your benefit as well. But I want to provide you with direction and see how you answer. Because if from the get-go I can see that, you know, we don't have that kind of working relationship, I know right out of the gate, maybe this is the best.
Next question.
I know that you guys are working with licensed material, but for an illustrator who is just interested in the most common stuff, what advice would you have for them as far as submissions go?
As far as submitting art?
Yeah, I think going back to what we said from the start, show me something that you have created in some form or fashion, you know, that is sequential storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, not to step in, but storytelling is everything.
Yeah.
I have had people, and you see this in published comics all the time. You see this in published comics from big two all the time. Not to harsh on the dating industry, but I will pick up sometimes a mainstream superhero comic and look at it and go, I have no idea what just happened. I have no idea how this character just did this one. Like, what is literally going on here? Clarity in storytelling. A comic book writer has to write something that someone can draw, and has to write something where there's really only a limited number of ways to draw it based on how it's been described. And clarity is everything.
I will also add that please be sure to do your research on your publisher before you submit. And I'll give you an example as to why. So with Fanbase Press, we have there's a tone, there's a style to the books that we release. And if I get something like John Wick, it is very clear to me that they have done no research into our company and that we just, John Wick is wonderful.
That's weird. I look at you, Barbara, and I think ultra-violence.
Absolutely.
That's my first thought is bloody ultra-violence.
All the time.
Yeah.
But it's very clear to me they've not done their research, and then that's a red flag for me. So I would say definitely, you want to publisher that is familiar with the genre, the age demographic that fit your project, because they will do the best due diligence for that project. They've worked with the audiences, they know how to promote and market it, but if you're going to, you know, just any publisher, they're not going to benefit you. So that, for me as an editor, if I see something submitted that in no way matches anything else that we've done, that's going to be a bad thing.
And I'll say, like, you know, my experience meeting Joe as a perfect example. As my into the comics industry, I feel like I could write almost anything, any book for any company. I think that as a writer and as an artist, it behooves you to be a professional who can apply yourself to whatever the job is. But at the time, Dynamite had a lot of pulp licenses from the 1930s and was doing a lot of that kind of thing, and that is something I know very well to heart. The first job he gave me was a spin-off from a previous series. That was my tryout. I read those 7 issues very closely. I understood them as well as I could, and my pitch was based very much on staying in the lane of the previous thing. I was also, the other approval process, it was a comic created by Bill Willingham. I had to get on the phone with Bill Willingham and convince Bill, here's what I'm going to do with your characters, right, and here's how you're going to be very happy about that. And the phone call went well, and I have a career in comics. If the phone call had gone poorly, there's no first issue of anything for me. So, you know.
Well, time with us.
Not me. Yeah, maybe someone else, but yeah. I doubt it. Other questions? Anyone? Yes, sir.
So, from a writer-editor perspective, if you were to get, say, a cold call from an artist, do you have any opinion whether you like getting that kind of thing, dislike it? Do you have any opinion at all getting cold calls?
A literal call?
No, well, yeah.
He knocks on your door at like 2 a.m.
Yeah. I don't answer my phone if I don't recognize
like
the number.
3 a.m. So. Text, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
Do you guys have an open submission email?
Yeah, we do. It's on the website, you know, but again, it's on the website, but again, we're so specific, and we don't do as David knows. Although we do a version of creator owned, but I mean the company, you know, is here for not for, you know, everyone, creator owned. So, you know, the Boys was creator owned, but that's a very different set of circumstances. A lot of the stuff that we've done with partners, and we're doing a thing with David, is, you know, it gets a little bit more complicated. It's good, you know, you go into the deal eyes wide open. It's if it's the deal you want, and it's not the Image deal, basically, where, you know, you have everything.
But I'd imagine that if someone was doing an open submission to Dynamite for art,
they
better be able to draw Rick Sonia, right, or Vampirella, or right, one of your flagships.
Yeah, no, I mean, if it looks good. Yeah. You know, I mean, if the art looks good, and, you know,
I mean, we've hired people for Elvira based on their ability to draw Elvira.
Yeah, you know, well, there's a very particular set of circumstances.
Yes.
You gotta get her right. Not, you know, that's the thing you think, but, you know, her image, her face, her acting.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of. That's the main note is that I'm not, you know, I don't look like I'm. I look in this panel or whatever.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, the ability to execute, you know, but again, all those questions about a cold call are still going to go back, like, well, how long did this take you? You know, what are you doing for time? You know, I'm also, I know it's tough, and this is again, probably a little bit of a wet blanket, but I am also looking for people that don't have a day job, you know, in the sense of they're committed. They've figured out a way to make that work, you know, so that there is not like, oh, I'll do these pages at the end of the day or whatever, you know. And it's tough, but I ultimately have a schedule I have to make. I have to put out monthly comics. We have to put those monthly comics, a lot of them, with a lot of covers.
Yeah.
We have to put those monthly comics into collections, and we got to just keep that machine going. Now, there's art in that machine. I'm not saying it's a, you used the word earlier, it's not a total, you know, draconian assembly line, but there is a machine there.
Kind of on the opposite side of the spectrum. You can see that there are differences in the industry. So we do have open submissions. I will say I'm super excited. We had 2 cold call people show up to our booth yesterday, artists. They're phenomenal. I can't wait to find a project for them.
That's great.
My goodness. And they don't have any credits. Like, I just looked at their art, their portfolios. It's amazing. So we may not find you if you don't reach out to us. So
right.
Always reach out.
Yeah, and, it doesn't hurt to, it really doesn't hurt to ask. I mean, the worst thing you're going to get from me is not a response.
Yeah.
I mean, quite honestly, you're just not.
Silence.
Yeah, you're just not going to get a response.
Yeah.
You know, and that's more just about reality. You know, I can't answer everything that comes, you know, my way. But if there is something, you know, I'm approachable.
Here's an example of a completely unique, because all career paths in comics, I would argue, are unique. The book I do with Kevin, Drawing Blood. Ben Bishop, who's the artist on that, is now drawing turtles, and it's his dream job that he's always wanted. When we were starting to work on Drawing Blood, I had written a couple of scripts. No one had started drawing it yet. I was at Kevin's place in San Diego, and we didn't have a main artist on the book. A artist who shares his heritage of being from Maine, which they take very seriously, maple syrup in the blood.
Maniacs.
And, maniacs. And he had submitted he had a great-looking, self-published, kickstarted book called The Aggregate, and he just wanted a blurb from Kevin. When he gave the book to Kevin, he sent the book to Kevin and said, if you could just say, like, here's another great artist from Maine, like, that would be the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Well, the greatest thing that ever happened to me and Bishop is Kevin and I were sitting around, and he said, hey, how about this guy for Drawing Blood? And I paged through it, and I was like, oh, send him a text. This is really beautiful stuff. He captures emotion and acting, and that's really what we're looking for, because our thing is this sort of, it's not a punch him up, it's a contemporary comedy drama thing.
Did you get the blurb?
He did eventually get the blurb.
Pretty good.
I know he got the job.
But Ben, you know, drawing the 1.5 million copies sold Lost Ronin came from him sending a submission to Kevin for a blurb. And I think it was actually Courtney, it was actually Kevin's wife, went, have you thought about that main kid who sent us the thing? And we were like, oh yeah, call him up and we'll do it.
We have about 2 minutes, we should probably wrap up. If you don't send it, if you don't take your shot, you know, you're gonna miss. So get it in, but when you send it, it better be good. And you better be a human being when you make your pitch, right? Look them in the eyes, shake their hand, be nice, be respectful. It helps if you know a little bit about what they do. Know John Wick to Barbara. These are all great points.
Barbara, tell everyone where they can find you and what's next for you guys.
Absolutely. So Fanbase Press is on the show floor in Small Press 03. And you can find us at fanbasepress.com. Please find me after. In terms of press, which we touched on briefly, you just need your first personal connection to a press person. So if you want to do your due diligence, see me outside after. I will give you my card, and you've got your foot in the door for press. We have a Kickstarter, our very first in 15 years, coming up for a
That's right.
Yes, we're doing an expanded hardcover of our Eisner and Harvey-nominated series Ripple Effects, which explores life as a superhero with an invisible illness. Gail Simone's writing a foreword. We've got study guides, art gallery by kiddos with invisible disabilities and illnesses drawing themselves as superheroes. I've got postcards for that as well.
Cool. Yeah, we're not on the show floor. It's Sunday. It doesn't matter anyway. We're at dynamite.com. That's it. Yeah.
And are you're about to run to another panel?
I am going to. Yes, so you can't see me outside. I mean, you'll see me outside.
What's the panel? So they can run to see the
panel.
Oh,
it's Disney, or the Disney.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to come up with a Disney pitch for a character you guys haven't used yet. Ryland?
I am at Ryland Grant on all forms of social media. That is R-Y-L-E-N-D-G-R-A-N-T. If you were just listening, I would spell it because it's not a real name. I should have drunkenly arranged letters and saddled me with it, so now I have to spell it for everybody. You can grab my comics at my comic shops everywhere, The Jump, Aberrant, Bandex, a couple of movies out this year. Check out my social medias, and you'll see all that business.
Great, and I'm David Avalone. The website is davidavalonefreelance.com. The nice thing about having a silly last name that is easily teased in grade school is I'm very easily Googled. There's only one David Avalone for 9 or 10 pages of Google. And my current book with Eastman, as mentioned earlier, from Image Comics, Drawing Blood, I recommend you read it because it's great stuff. And I'll have have some coming from Dynamite probably by the end of the year. And that's it. Thank you very much for joining us.
If you're watching us on YouTube, be sure to smash that like button. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or other fine purveyors of ear crack, please leave us a 5-star review. And wherever you're watching and or listening, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We'll see you back here next week for more Madcap Hijinks on the Writer's Block.
For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.